The burgeoning social media scene has clearly captured the attention of physicians. It began with blogs a decade ago, but has grown exponentially in recent years with the advent of Facebook, MySpace, and Twitter. Doctors are not only blogging about their views on healthcare or political issues, they're also creating Facebook pages and jumping into the fray of Twitter. But with the dramatic increase in these sites and the way the medical community communicates both among its members and to the outside world, there are issues that pose potentially serious legal risks and consequences. Well, joining me this morning to discuss these new benefits and risks are Rob Olick, Associate Professor in the Center for Bioethics and Humanities. He also teaches bioethics to medical students. And Aaron Stupple, a fourth-year medical student with Upstate Medical University and a self-proclaimed social media aficionado. Well, welcome to you both. Thanks, Rob and Aaron, for coming in today. Rob, so, you know, a week or so ago, we had a conversation with your colleagues about social media. It's used with personalized medicine. It's being taught at the medical school to help medical students learn how to use this new technology. And it's obviously had a dramatic effect on how the medical community communicates. How do you see it being used now?
Well, technology tools like Facebook and Twitter that you mentioned, and also web-based tools, secure websites, blogs, are increasingly being used as communication tools and education tools, both between doctors and patients, and doctors and doctors, and patients themselves. For example, patients in support groups who are affected by a common disease or condition are using these tools increasingly to share information. So, you know, some people use the term Web 2.0 compared to Web 1.0. And one way to think about Web 2.0 is to think that it creates a more interactive, participatory environment so that patients can be more actively involved in their care and in self-education and education that is directed to some extent by physicians.
And are you seeing that amongst medical students as well, Aaron?
It's an interesting kind of situation, I guess, with medical students. They're very comfortable, especially current medical students, with using Facebook. They grew up with it. They use it in high school. But they use it more in a personal means and don't have much professional contact, in my experience. There are a couple medical students who really are engaging with discussions with other physicians and other medical students and exploring what these tools can do. But by and large, I'd actually say most medical students refrain from any kind of professional use with social media, except for some notable exceptions.
It's interesting to me because it seems like it raises a lot of issues. In the first thing that you said, Rob, it sounds to me like it opens the door to a lot of kind of universality or equality in terms of patient care. I mean, you've got the patients taking a more activist role, potentially querying their doctors, playing a role in a collaborative way with their physicians potentially or with other patients. So that's kind of a sounds like a movement in medicine in general, that this is a tool that would be helpful toward. But what you said, Aaron, is interesting because it sounds like it also raises an issue of a learning curve in terms of how these things, these different media tools, will require certain considerations in their use. And there's a real learning curve when you take it from the personal world into a so-called professional world. Would you agree?
Yes, certainly. The learning curve definitely interests me as far as being in medical education. And I mean, everybody faces the learning curve for social media. And there's kind of three stages that people address. Usually they start off just sharing stuff. And then there's this idea that you could actually teach with it. And then in the medical world, there's the last idea that you could do something clinically with patients with social media. And that's definitely the hardest, most, I guess, least charted territory. And so trickling down to teaching and then sharing, you know, students could pretty easily learn how to share and engage, but how to have any kind of, you know, interacting with your colleagues or your professors, interacting with senior faculty, and then interacting with patients and patient communities is uncharted territory, you know, for the whole field.
Yeah, there's a lot of power in it, clearly, and that's something that I think is so appealing. There's just that immediacy of communication, that interactivity, but it raises a lot of big question marks as to where to go with it. Is that what you're seeing, Rob?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, you could sort of ask the question, is an educated patient our best patient? And social media answers yes to that question. It provides that vehicle for interaction and exchange of ideas and information. But as you just suggested, it does also raise some potential concerns because, of course, doctors and healthcare providers have obligations to maintain the privacy and confidentiality of their patients' information. And social media vehicles pose challenges for what information should and can be shared and who has access to that information, because the universe of potential people who might access, say, Facebook or a website is essentially the whole world potentially. And that's a lot different than the more private interaction between doctor and patient in the doctor's office or that might occur in a hospital.
So there are really a lot of questions, as many questions being raised as there are benefits available, it sounds to me.
Well, I think we're still learning a lot about that. We have a long way to go to see where technology takes us and to work through some of the challenges.
Well, I'm going to have you hold that thought. We're going to come right back. We have to take a short break. We're going to continue this conversation, and there's a lot more to talk about. I'm Linda Cohen. This is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio, 106.9 and 570 WSYL. Welcome back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen, along with my guest, Professor Rob Olick, and fourth-year medical student Aaron Stupple, and we're talking about doctors and social media. Well, before the break, we were talking about all the potential benefits that exist with using social media and the fact that medical students have had a lot of experience from a personal standpoint doing so, and doctors are learning to do it as a way of communicating primarily, it seems, right now with other doctors. But it raises a lot of questions. And what concerns you about it, Rob?
Well, I'll mention two concerns. The one that we were just starting to talk about before the break, and which is the most obvious and most talked about, is concerns about confidentiality. So traditionally, doctors have had very firm and clear obligations to maintain the confidentiality of information about their patients.
And there are laws these days, the whole HIPAA.
That's laws. Correct. I mean, we have laws of various sorts, including HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, which provides even penalties for violating patients' confidentiality. And when you're using social media tools, again, there are certain challenges that are involved in that. First, you have the question, what information is acceptable to put on those sites? Especially when that information may not come off the site, may still be out there, and who has access to that. And with the rules and the sort of etiquette and practices for use of social media tools still evolving, those can be special challenges and perhaps potential risks for doctors using these tools. The other thing I would mention briefly is the question of when you were sharing information that is anonymous and for educational purposes, and when you're communicating with patients in a way that might be understood to be medical advice. That raises other concerns about the doctor-patient relationship, what happens when patients rely on that information and take it to be medical advice, when in many cases, for example, if you're communicating through Facebook, you're not actually in the room communicating back and forth with the patient. Yet you run the risk, or perhaps intentionally you are, saying something that is taken as medical advice, and the patient relies on that. And you don't have the same control, perhaps, as you do when the patient is in your office.
Seems to me there are many potential consequences to that type of behavior. I mean, I think that raises the issue of, even down the road, should we be using the internet for medical visits? I mean, you know, a Skype type of situation. What are your thoughts about that, Aaron?
Should we use the internet for medical visits, or?
Well, any of these things, yeah.
I mean, I think at baseline, you know, information and information sharing is the stock and trade of medicine. And so for medicine to progress without applying these advancements that we've made recently in information sharing, that would be folly. So I think we absolutely need to learn how to use these tools. As far as the risks of obviously using a telemedicine or some sort of Skype type interaction, the classic description is that a physician needs to actually see a patient and do a physical exam, and there are certain very traditional expectations of a doctor-patient relationship. But I'm new to the field, but I would be surprised if those expectations of that professional relationship didn't evolve over time. And there's certainly some innovative practitioners that are trying out some telemedicine, that are trying out offering clinical advice over the internet without necessarily having to have an office visit. And I think a lot of patients want that, and I can't imagine that trend evaporating.
Yeah, I think that's the key. I think it's here to stay. The question is how to do it intelligently and in ways where the patient's privacy, for one, is protected, and all these legal issues that we've talked about and ethical issues are addressed. And it seems like it's an unfolding story as we look at it. Rob, what are your thoughts, though, as far as this issue of immediacy? For example, let's say, given the fact that if a patient begins to feel they can contact their doctor and they send them an email or a Facebook message, I'm not particularly knowledgeable about Facebook, you can tell, and the doctor doesn't look at it for 2 or 3 days because it's not part of his regular routine, don't we run the risk there of malpractice or something untoward happening? I mean, it seems like there's a danger there, even in terms of just the health of the patient.
There is a danger there, and I think what a lot of doctors do is they establish a rule with their patients about whether they will communicate with patients by email or not, and what the nature of those communications should be. I think when email is used to communicate with patients, it's not used exclusively or without having first established a doctor-patient relationship in the more traditional way. So if my doctor is responding to an email that I may have sent, that would be a good communication if it's based upon a conversation we've already had, an examination that has already taken place, an office visit that has already taken place. When it happens in a vacuum, in the absence of that, then there's an increased risk that the doctor won't know certain pertinent information about the patient, and that might affect the value of the advice that is given.
But how does one put those controls in place? What do you think, Aaron?
How to put the controls? That's the big question. I mean, how can, is there a way to do this securely? Some of the thinking is that you would obviously need to train, there's some companies that try to train a pool of physicians and actually train them in garnering personalized health information from the patient through the history as best as possible, either online or, on the telephone, and then create some sort of advice package, again, specifically tailored to that patient and deliver to them. And a really interesting trick at that point is if I, as a patient, have acquired this information from an online doc who is different from the physician I see locally, then you have competing streams of information. It's definitely a mess, but you have to keep in mind that
it sounds like a mess.
That we have a mess right now. I mean, patients routinely Google their symptoms and will come into a doctor's office with a ton of information that's poor. And so,
but the problem still, it sounds to me, or the point is that for the most part right now, it's still a one-to-one conversation. I mean, it's an in-person kind of interchange. Whatever information they garner elsewhere, they still come in and have this opportunity to talk to the physician and and vet that information in some ways. But this notion that you just laid out, Rob, which was that a patient may have established a relationship, maybe even a long-term relationship with a doctor, but something new has occurred, and then they need to communicate that information. Isn't there a danger of them doing it on on social media or, I mean, in terms of their health? I'm not even talking about the issue of privacy. Is there a danger about utilizing that as a method of communication for their health?
There is a danger. I think that the point that Aaron just made is really important, that you want to have an established history and relationship with the patient as a basis for that sort of interaction. So you know your patient, and when they give you new information, you fit it into a context of their personal health profile, as opposed to it being something completely new and different. Of course, one thing a doctor could do is if there's something new and different that comes through a social media vehicle or through email, is ask the patient to come in for a visit. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always that option to have the face-to-face contact.
And not fall kind of prey to this convenience factor of trying to, you know, give out medical information on the internet, so to speak.
Right. Well, I think an opposite side of that is that, you know, there's risks to patients now where they feel like, okay, I don't, you know, my car isn't working, scheduling an office visit takes a while. And if they have something urgent that could be addressed through a conversation, you know, there's certainly that opportunity to be able to, you know, if you can quickly contact your physician through your mobile phone, you know, you have a lot more flexibility. And so I think the argument can be made the opposite way, that, you know, there are risks that are obviated through convenient communication.
Yeah, I guess the reality, though, is in practice, I wonder how many doctors can respond to tweets, you know, or...
So there's a thing.
Or, you know, I mean, in real time, you know, to respond to an urgent tweet or that kind of thing.
Sure. So using Twitter has its limitations. And I think a common thing that happens in this topic is that people look at Facebook or Twitter as the one social media tool or one social media outlet. And the truth is that there's a diverse range that are constantly becoming available. And these things are cheap. You know, it doesn't cost anything to have a Facebook account or a Twitter account. So these platforms arrive. They arrive quickly. They have specific useful tools. It's it remains to be seen whether there will be a tool that can really work for physicians specifically.
It sounds to me like there's a need, though.
Definitely.
It seems like there needs to be some uniformity and some vetting and some kind of controls in place. Would you agree that that needs to evolve for it to be useful? Most useful?
To be most useful, yes. I mean, already it's showing a lot of promise and has been useful for a lot of folks. Social media tools certainly can be empowering, not just for doctors, but perhaps even more importantly for patients.
Yeah.
So patients can take more control and be more participatory and actively involved in their own healthcare.
Well, Rob Olick and Aaron Stupple, thank you so very much for coming in today. Rob is a professor, associate professor in the Bioethics and Humanities Department, and Aaron is a fourth-year medical student at Upstate Medical University. Thanks for coming in and chatting about this very challenging and interesting topic. We have to take a short break, but there's more HealthLink on air ahead. I'm Linda Cohen. This is FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYS.